LinkedIn News.
Getting older is something to celebrate. We've gained experience, honed a skill set, and acquired the wisdom to know where and when to apply our energy. But when it comes to work, employers and colleagues don't always see the value in older workers. Instead, we often buy into ageist myths that punish the most seasoned employees. The bias shows up in the data, too. For people 20 years and older, the average time spent on unemployment is about 20 weeks. But for people ages 65 and older, that average is 28 weeks. Workplace ageism is a pressing issue, especially because older workers, and I'm talking about people between the ages of 40 and 60, make up a bigger portion of the workforce now more than ever before. So this month, Get Hired is running a special bonus series all about ageism in the workplace and how to combat it. We'll be talking about what ageism is and who it affects, strategies for countering age discrimination during the hiring process, what companies can do to foster a more age-inclusive work environment, and much, much more. Today, we're bringing you the first episode in our series, a conversation with Chip Conley, co-founder and CEO of Modern Elder Academy. That's right after the break.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by AT&T Business. Rainn Wilson's business advice? Find a network that has your back. That's why he launched A Talking Pillow, powered by AT&T Business's reliability. Take your business to the next level at business.att.com.
From LinkedIn News, this is Get Hired, a podcast for the ups and downs and the ever-changing landscape of our professional lives. I'm Andrew Seaman, LinkedIn Senior Managing Editor for Jobs and Career Development, bringing you conversations with experts who, like me, want to see you succeed at work, at home, and everywhere in between. To kick off our series on ageism, I sat down with Chip Conley, co-founder and CEO of Modern Elder Academy. MEA is a midlife wisdom school for people navigating life transitions in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Before MEA, Chip worked in the boutique hotel industry for over 20 years. Then, at age 52, he was recruited by the founders of a little-known startup called Airbnb to help them grow their company into a global hospitality brand. It was during his time at Airbnb that Chip came to be known as the, quote, modern elder. Today, he's sharing his wisdom and insights on rejuvenating your career in midlife, because as Chip says, midlife isn't a crisis, it's a calling. Here's Chip.
I was lucky enough to start a boutique hotel company at age 26, Joie de Vivre, based in San Francisco, and ran that for 24 years, created 52 boutique hotels around California, and became the second largest boutique hotel company in the U.S. But in my late 40s, I had a rough patch. Every part of my life was falling apart, including my career. We had 3,500 employees, but we were going into the Great Recession. I didn't want to be running the company anymore. And I was one of the older people in the company. And I really got to a place where I just had to sell. And I had some time in my early 50s to sort of imagine what was next. And then out of the blue, I got a call from a guy named Brian Chesky, the co-founder and CEO of Airbnb, saying, hey, we have this small tech startup here in San Francisco, and we need your help, because there was nobody in the company who had a travel or hospitality background. And most people in the company had never been an entrepreneur or a leader. And so I spent 7.5 years with them as their modern elder. I didn't like the term when they first said it, but they said, Chip, a modern elder is someone who's as curious as they are wise. And that's what led me to ultimately creating the Modern Elder Academy, MEA, which is dedicated to helping people in midlife and later to reimagine and repurpose themselves.
Yeah. And I really appreciate the work you do, because I think we're at a tipping point where there really is a new generation where they're not going to sort of just fade into retirement, a lovely home. People aren't necessarily going to retire. They're not going to just stay at a company for 30, 40 years. Things are going to be different, right?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. 50 years ago, retirement was the golden years, and people looked forward to retirement. But as we've moved to knowledge workers instead of factory workers, people feel like, hey, I'm 65. My brain's still working. In fact, I've got more wisdom than I used to have. And there's this thing called crystallized intelligence that gets better with age. And the long story short is, like, why should I leave? And we're seeing, by choice or necessity, people are staying in the workplace longer. And at the same time, the U.S. Department of Labor says that next year, in 2025, the majority of Americans will have a younger boss. And we've never seen that before. So we as a society better get smart pretty quickly about how we collaborate amongst the generations.
Yeah. And so can you tell us what you do as part of the Modern Elder Academy?
I wrote a book called Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder, based upon my Airbnb experience. And because of that, the idea of MEA came about, Modern Elder Academy. We have two campuses, one in Baja in Mexico on the beach, which is quite beautiful, and then one in Santa Fe, New Mexico on a 2,600-acre regenerative horse ranch. We also do online programs. The basic premise is this. We call it a midlife wisdom school. Mm-hmm. It's a place where you reframe your relationship with aging, because Becca Levy at Yale has shown if you go from a negative to a positive in terms of your perspective on aging, you are going to gain 7.5 years of additional life. And the three pillars of our curriculum are how to navigate transitions in midlife and beyond, how to cultivate a sense of purpose at any time in your life, and how to own your wisdom, how to actually mine what you've learned along the way. Because wisdom is really your painful life lessons that are the raw material for your future wisdom. So your metabolization of the experiences you've had in your life help you to get wiser. And I think we're moving into an era in terms of where wise wisdom in the workplace is going to be really important, because all the world's knowledge is on ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. But wisdom is a whole different perspective on how to look at things.
Drawing on your own experience and then obviously everything you've learned developing these curriculum and also just helping people over the years, I'm assuming there's a lot of people who they feel loss, especially like once they hit 40, they start heading toward 50 and they start thinking, what's next or what am I supposed to do? Because I think ingrained in so many people, when you hit 60 or 65, there's like a hard stop. And that's obviously not the case. So how do you teach people to start thinking around that time for the next chapter in their career?
You know, retirement is a luxury. It means you're no longer having income coming in potentially. Now, there's ways to get around that. You can have a portfolio life where you're doing a little bit of consulting. Maybe you're an Airbnb host. Who knows? I mean, there's just other things you can do to make money. So a lot of people are semi-retiring. So helping people to understand what gives them a sense of purpose is really important, because the purpose is one of the guiding lights that helps a person feel like they have a reason to get up in the morning. I like to say that the shortcut to purpose is usually one of four paths: something that excites you, something that agitates you, something that you're curious about, or something from childhood or maybe early adulthood that you used to be passionate about, but you've neglected. And on that last one, what I'll say is that there was a litigation attorney at our Baja campus. She was 60 years old. She'd been litigating for 35 years and she was tired of it, because if you're a litigator, you're constantly arguing and negotiating. And so she came to MEA to have an experience where she could imagine what might be an adjacent career for her. She didn't want to do this anymore. And by the end of the week, she realized that fourth point, something from childhood or early adulthood that you were passionate about, but you've neglected. And she realized that when she was a teenager, she loved cooking pies with her grandma. And when she travels anywhere, the first thing she looks on a digital map for is a nearby bakery. And then when she invites friends over for dinner, they tend to come over and she like makes sure that they're going to stay for dessert. So all of the pieces of this puzzle were there. She just didn't see it as a possibility. So by the end of the week, she made a commitment to her fellow cohort members, because our average cohort has about 20 to 25 people in it. And she said, I'm going to go learn to become a pastry chef and start a bakery in my neighborhood, because there is a bakery that closed down during COVID that, you know, is still vacant. So, you know, starting a business, for example, is something that a lot of people do after age 50. You don't have to go out and work for someone else. The fastest growing set of entrepreneurs in the US are people 50 and older, and they actually have a much higher likelihood of success than someone in their 20s.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I see so many people going the consultant route. And what was actually funny is, in a prior life, I was a medical reporter for Reuters. And I remember I was working on a story about some sort of new surgical procedure. And I was looking for someone who was an expert in this type of surgery. And I got this doctor who turned out he was retired, but they were still paying him to come in certain days a week, because they realized that all the younger surgeons were only trained on sort of robotic surgery, and they still needed people with the knowledge to go in and do more complicated handwork. And he said, you know what? They pay me to come in. I keep everything fresh. I get to be around young people. And he goes, frankly, he goes, most of the time I just sit here and read, which is what I like to do. And he says, I'm being paid for it. So I'll never forget that.
Well, and that's a great example of being a modern elder. If he can be learning from the young people and teaching at the same time, a mentor and an intern at the same time, and to be able to be in a place in your life where you are continually learning and openness to new experiences, those are the things that create the fountain of youth.
We'll be right back with Chip Conley.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise. A promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. A promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
From the minds of visionaries to the desks of disruptors, I'm Laura Schmidt, host of the Redefining Work podcast. Join me each week as we explore the new world of work through the lens of those shaping it. CEOs, HR leaders, investors, and more. Be a part of the conversation that changes everything. Subscribe to Redefining Work today.
And we're back with Chip Conley, co-founder and CEO of Modern Elder Academy. I guess the more difficult question is for people who, because obviously a litigation attorney or a surgeon, they're in a different bracket than a lot of Americans. So for people who are on a much tighter income, what advice do you have for them as they sort of look into the late 50s, 60s, or even 70s for their careers?
So the first thing to look at is if you show up with a curiosity and a passionate engagement for what you do, people will not notice your wrinkles. They'll notice your energy. And that's really important. Now, that is assuming you're going to be doing a in-person or a video conference with someone who's going to be interviewing you. Do know that curiosity and passionate engagement in the work that you do allows a person to say, like, hey, this person is open to learning something new. And some of the myths that go with older workers, like, oh, they don't want to learn something new. They're not interested in technology. They're grumpy, et cetera. You know, if you can show up with who you are and you don't fit those myths, people will appreciate it. Secondly, get clear about what you have learned along the way. Your painful life lessons are the raw material for your future wisdom. So help the person you're interviewing with, who's often younger than you, to see that your life experiences has brought you some wisdom that you didn't have 20 years ago. And you can say things like, I make better decisions today than I did when I was in my mid-30s for the following reasons. So be really clear about what you've learned along the way and get even more clear on what is it that you're really good at. I've learned at age 63 that I'm a social alchemist. What the hell is that, Chip? Social alchemists, they know how to bring people together in a way that you could create a potent team or a potent cocktail party or dinner. But understanding and distilling down what you do well is pretty important. Another thing to consider is how do you start spending less money? One of our campuses in Baja, we're surrounded by people from all over the world who choose to live on the beach at one-third the cost of what they spend in the United States. So whether they're retired or whether they're actually a remote worker working there, and there are a lot of people who fit that profile, they can actually spend less money. And therefore, you have more control over when you're going to retire. And then finally, I would just say the most important thing is to find organizations that are going to prize what you have to offer. Sometimes that's a young organization. In the case of Airbnb, I was lucky. I was twice the age of the average person there, but they really needed some wisdom. So how do you figure that out? How do you figure out which organizations are going to appreciate that? Take a look at whether an organization has an ERG, like the LinkedIn has the wisdom group. If it's a young organization, take a look and see who do you know in that organization or whose second or third degree of separation. So you can actually spend some time going to events with the organization, because a lot of organizations actually have social events that are open to the public. And you could go with a friend who actually is in the company and you just start to build relationships there. If you're going to be defined by your age, it's going to be hard. But if you're going to be defined as someone who has wisdom and is an enjoyable person to hang out with and is curious and passionately engaged in what they're doing, you have a lot better chance of finding a job.
Yeah. And also, you mentioned the litigation attorney, that she sounded like she was sort of over it at that point, where she said, I don't want to do this anymore. And you go back to the idea of letting your passion speak for you. If you no longer have that passion, or if you've fallen out of enjoyment with your job, you may need to think about a career change or shaking things up, right?
Yeah.
And obviously that's hard, but if you still plan or need to work for another 20 years,
I would like to grow. I want to feel like my career path is going to allow me to grow. And if they say to you, well, just do your job, then yeah, you do have to move on. I remember someone said this to me before. There was a consultant who came into a company and saw that everybody was disengaged. And the CEO said to him, there's a lot of deadwood around here. And the consultant said, were they deadwood when you hired them, or did you create deadwood? Because you created a culture that was full of deadwood. And what he meant by that was just to say, like, some companies don't have a culture that creates enthusiastic, engaged, and curious employees. And you can't change that culture on your own. So you may have to leave.
Yeah. And also, that's why I like what you suggested about people who use half their time to be coaches, because I still think that too many companies believe in the totality of the ladder, which is everyone's going to keep going to the top. And eventually, you know, not everyone can be CEO, not everyone can be a senior vice president. You do need places for other people who are going to get to senior middle management, and then you need other things for them to do. Otherwise, you are going to create that deadwood.
That is so true. I have a blog post from a long time ago about Procter & Gamble. And Procter & Gamble is a really interesting place, because the people who work at Procter & Gamble stay there for a lifetime. And basically any CEO at Procter & Gamble had to go up through the ranks. So you have a lot of people there who've been a senior vice president or a director or in some middle management role, and they're not going any further. They're not going to become CEO. So what they did is they created a master's society. And when someone's been in the company for 10 years and they've hit certain kinds of parameters, they can go into the master's society in their specialty, in their category. So I'm a master's society person in marketing or in production or in finance. And it gives them some additional responsibilities in the company. And it's a beautiful idea, because what it does is it says experience matters. Institutionalized wisdom about how this company operates matters. So process knowledge means you know how to get things done in an organization. What any organization, or specifically this organization, and people who have been around a while know those things.
Yeah.
And so it's a beautiful idea, and I think more companies should do it.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, and you know, I think you touch on this, and it's probably organic for you, but especially as you age, I think socialization becomes more of an obstacle. You know, I find that even in my late 30s, your friends, they move away, they have kids, you're struggling to keep those connections up. And I think especially as you age, those social connections become more important, even beyond sort of career-wise. But do you think that especially now people should continue to network and then also just create a social safety net for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of reasons why socialization is important. And let's start by saying, here's a crazy idea. What if you thought of friendship as being a practice? So if you're going to golf, you're going to practice. If you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to practice. If you're going to, you know, go out and be a writer, you got to have a writing practice. So what if friendship is a practice, something that you have to invest in to get better at it over time? For most of us, we don't think that way. For men in particular, they're not as good at keeping friends, keeping up with friendships as women are, for a lot of reasons, mostly from childhood. When we're in our 20s, 30s, and 40s, we are in the spinning plate phenomena in our life, which means we have a lot going on, and therefore it's easy to see certain friendships atrophying. And so why is it valuable to keep those friends up? Yes, there's network opportunities. That's helpful. But beyond the network opportunities, the number one variable for people in their 80s and 90s who are happy and healthy was how invested were they in midlife in their social relationships. So this isn't just good for your career. If you want to go out and start a business or you want to go get another job, this is really good for your life, because friends are not a nice to have, they're a need to have. And so I would just say, yes, thinking of it as a practice, which means if it's a practice, you put time into it, is really an essential piece of it.
From knowing your background, knowing sort of what caused you to create the Modern Elder Academy, for people who aren't quite there yet, where they've had a lot of personal issues, they've sort of reached the end with their business or with their profession, but they do feel like, okay, something's changing and they're listening to this. What is one thing you would suggest they do now to start the conversation with themselves to really put themselves on a better path now?
I'm going to give you two simple answers. One is look at what resources exist out there in terms of books, YouTube videos, programs like MEA, a simple option, or online programs. Look for what's there. But secondly, find a friend who is in a similar place as you. And I promise you, you're not alone. There are other people out there who are similarly aged to you, who are sort of in a place, it might be even a coworker, who are feeling like, you know what, this isn't working, but I have no idea what's next. And then become accountability partners, possibly accountability partners using that first suggestion, which is the resources that are out there. Maybe once a month, the two of you have a meal together and you talk about what you've done in the last month to imagine what's next for you. Because actually doing this on your own is harder. And it's nice to be able to have somebody who you're doing it with. Because the first thing is about filling your head with ideas. The second thing is about the socialization. If you can do them together, that's where it gets really successful.
I think that's really fantastic. And especially to hear the struggles other people go to or the obstacles they overcome, it makes you feel less alone.
Yes, totally. Exactly.
Is there anything else that you think is like really crucial to add or anything that maybe I didn't ask about?
You know, I've written recently a book on this topic, which is called Learning to Love Midlife, 12 Reasons Why Life Gets Better with Age. And some of that book is really focused on the professional sphere. There's a word that I've coined in the book called successism. We're familiar with consumerism, which has been around for 70 years, trying to keep up with the Joneses. Mm-hmm. But successism is often trying to keep up with your parents' expectations of yourself. And at age 50, maybe it's time for you to actually let that go. And so successism really speaks to this idea that, oh my God, someone else's definition of success is what I'm trying to live up to. What if I changed my definition of success? And I talk a lot about time affluence and how there's value as we go into midlife and later to actually having some time and space in your life. For me, if I hadn't had some time and space where I created a midlife atrium between age 50 and 52, the Airbnb folks would never have come to me if I was still running my company. Sometimes having some space gives you some perspective and some sense of like what's next for you. And it gives you the opportunity to be available.
Yeah, I really like that. Well, thank you so much, Chip.
Andrew, thank you. I hope this was helpful for those of you who are listening.
That was Chip Conley, co-founder and CEO of Modern Elder Academy. If you're leaving today's conversation with a new learning to apply to your job search or career, I'd like to invite you to write about it in a review on Apple Podcasts. Our team really enjoys reading what you learn from our show. Plus, it helps other people discover our community. And speaking of community, remember that we're always here, backing you up and cheering you on. Connect with me, Andrew Seaman, and the Get Hired community on LinkedIn to continue the conversation. In fact, subscribe to my weekly newsletter that's called, you guessed it, Get Hired, to get even more information delivered to you every week. You can find those links in the show notes. And of course, don't forget to click the follow or subscribe button to get our podcast delivered to you every Wednesday, because we'll be continuing these conversations on the next episode, right here, wherever you like to listen. Get Hired is a production of LinkedIn News. This episode was produced by Alexis Ramdow. Grace Rubin is our associate producer. Asaf Yidron engineered our show. Joe DeGiorgi mixed our show. Dave Pond is head of news production. Enrique Montalvo is our executive producer. Courtney Koop is the head of original programming for LinkedIn. Dan Roth is the editor-in-chief of LinkedIn. And I'm Andrew Seaman. Until next time, stay well and best of luck.